no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Dave Manuk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mindell. Welcome to day two coverage of the 2021 NHL Draft. And alongside of it, an extensive celebration of the birth of the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, let's get started talking about day two of the draft. The Jets, of course, are going to pick here in the second round, the third round, and the fifth round. So you know that they're going to make a few more selections. Their pick coming up in this round, in round two, is at number 50, round three, number 82, and then round five at 146. We will see if they add any picks to that total or subtract any picks to that total. But we go back to last night in the first round of the 2021 NHL draft, where the Jets selected Chaz Lucius at number 18 overall. You know, Lucius, Minnesota kid, going to go play at the University of Minnesota, has been with the United States National Team Development Program. So, you know, having had some hindsight, having had, say, 12 hours since we got off air yesterday, any more thoughts about the selection of Chaz Lucius, or still sort of a similar thought process that, you know, this pick seems to be on its face to be a pretty decent value where the Jets got him?
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, we're not going to use the S-T-E-A-L word, but I mean, you know, you look at what, you know, Scott Wheeler, you know, put out on social media. I retweeted it. Like, he was saying that, you know, it's kind of, to him, reminds him a little bit of Cole Perfetti last year, right? Like, he was saying that he was one of the nicest kids, you know, in the draft. And, you know, you hear that, you know, he might be, you know, if he's not, you know, the best pure goal scorer in the draft, he's, you know, one of the best pure goal scorers that went in the first round. So, I mean, it looks like they've got a really good player. But going back to what we talked about with Craig Button, I mean, we're talking about 18-year-olds here, guys. So, I mean, even though, you know, the potential is sky high, I mean, he's going to go to the University of Minnesota for at least a year. It might be, you know, a couple years. Dave and I were talking about it after the show. Really, the only two players that, you know, have taken the college route and only spent 1 year there were Jacob Trouba and Kyle Connor, right? So it's always possible Chaz Lucius plays 1 year, but I mean, it's way too early to really, you know, predict how many years he's going to spend, you know, at Minnesota with the Golden Gophers. But yeah, it's looking like they've got another really talented player, and a guy that, even though he's a natural center, can play wing. So, you know, when you consider guys that the Jets haven't had a lot of high first round picks, like 10th overall is the highest they've had recently, you know, but they've got
Shifley, I think.
Exactly. And, you know, obviously in 2018, you know, they didn't have the first round pick. And then 2019 was obviously a later pick taking Heinola. So, you know, they look like they have a really good player, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where they go here, because, you know, as we talked about yesterday, once you get into the second round, you know, we've heard of a few players, like, you know, Atu Ratu is one guy that we're expecting to go in the second round. Winnipeg's Connor Roulette, you know, he might be a second round pick out of the Seattle Thunderbirds. But, you know, most of these guys, you know, we've heard of, but we've never seen play. So in terms of, you know, who the Jets are going to take in the second round and the rounds after that, it's a complete mystery to me. And I think all three of us.
Certainly. I mean, at this point in time, especially this year, where it's such a strange year for all the draft eligible players, where, you know, they didn't get to showcase themselves as much as they typically would. This part of the draft, day two, is way more of a dart throwing exercise for a lot of these teams than day one was. I mean, there were certainly some instances in day one where players went unexpectedly high. The Ottawa Senators, of course, you know, being at the forefront of that list. But for the most part, you know, day one, you know, leaving aside what the Montreal Canadiens did, because, you know, we've hashed that out last night and no need to rehash that at this point in time. You know, day one, for the most part, went relatively similar to a lot of people's boards, but I expect there to be a lot of upheaval as it pertains to day two, Mr. Manuk.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. I think, you know, in the best of times, it's kind of a crapshoot once you get out of the first couple of rounds, and even more so this year, where you've had entire, you know, legions of players not playing, you know, in their draft year. So, you know, to not have the OHL play, to have the QMJHL play a little bit and obviously stop, and have the WHL play in a limited bubble, obviously the USHL still had games there. You still had some players playing overseas, but it's such a different atmosphere this year. And I know, you know, in talking to scouts, they still had felt prepared. They still felt like their stuff was, they were ready to go. But you know, that's
I want to see the scout who's going to say, I have no idea what I'm doing here. This is going to be crazy.
That's a fair. Well, I mean, you know, like I said, they still have their targets, right? And I think the reality is this year more than any other is it's more narrow focus, you know, and that way we may see more movement that way, right? If you think, hey, there's a guy I really like that, you know, my scouting staff is in limited minutes has been able to watch him more than others and feels more comfortable drafting him, then maybe teams are more likely to make moves in order to secure that player's services in the future. So I think you may see that sort of thing. But then again, why make a trade if, you know that your scout was at 90% of the games and they had other teams had the scout there, you know, in more infrequent viewings. So I think there's a lot of, you know, we asked Craig Button about it. This is going to be a year unlike any other because, you know, like 2015, where the Jets got Mason Appleton in the sixth round and Sammy Niku in the seventh round, other drafts where they've taken guys, you know, the Connor Hellebuck in the fifth round, they've been able to find those diamonds in the rough because they've got a very good amateur scouting staff. But this year, more than any other, I really believe, and again, we won't know, unfortunately, for years, really, where it all falls out. But this could be one of those years where teams could take a chance on a player who, you know, has a lot of high upside and ends up being a phenomenal pick down the road.
But we're pleased to welcome to the show the new head coach of the Manitoba Moose, Mark Morrison, joins us. Mark, good morning. Nice to see you. Thanks for joining us and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me, guys. It's a little bit early for me out here on the West Coast, but I'm going to get used to it.
Yeah, you got to get used to the central time zone. That's where you're going to be residing for the foreseeable future as the new head coach of the Manitoba Moose. I guess, Mark, first of all, as I mentioned, congratulations, and walk us through how this came to be, how, you know, you had been the assistant coach for the Anaheim Ducks for the last number of years. Of course, your ties to the True North organization and the Manitoba Moose are long and storied. You know, what was it like getting the call from the True North organization, you know, gauging your interest in becoming the head man behind the Moose bench?
Well, super excited. I mean, if we go back 10 or 12 years from the old Victoria Salmon Kings, we were affiliated with the Moose and the Vancouver Canucks, where I worked closely with Craig Heisinger. So, and then I got the assistant job with the Moose, but they were at that time where we were in St. John's, the Ice Caps, and we moved from there in a couple of years with the Moose in Winnipeg. So, yeah, I've spent my time with True North, and I've enjoyed my time. I think when I got the call, I was super excited. Something I've wanted for a long time, that position. I like the development process. It's kind of who I am. Really, really happy.
You know, Mark, it's obviously, you know, still, July, middle of the summer here. But as you know, unfortunately, you know, the summer, you know, quickly goes away. And then as soon as you know it, you know, the leaves are falling off and it's fall. Like, I was going to ask, like, what's the plan? You mentioned you're out in BC. When are you going to make your way to Winnipeg? I imagine you've been, you know, having a lot of conversations with Zinger and some of the other coaches. But what's kind of the plan to make your way to Winnipeg? I imagine as well that you're still, trying to soak up the last few, days of summer. But what can you tell us about kind of the plan for yourself and getting ready for the 21-22 season?
Well, the plan right now is, I mean, so I go down, I open up the computer and I look at the staff for the Moose and the staff for the Jets, and not much has changed in 4 years. So I know everybody. A little bit of continuity there, I guess, and a little bit of loyalty towards people. But so I was making my early phone calls to the staff and you know, I know them all. So it's been pretty easy that way. So I think probably around mid-August, we've already we've been online and rented a place in Winnipeg, so that's getting done as we speak, and probably mid-August get in there and start going through the roster and things with the management.
You know, and Mark, like you said, you don't, the roster with an AHL franchise is more in flux than because you have to wait for training camp with the Jets and all that stuff. But how exciting is it for you from the perspective of seeing the schedule come out, the full AHL schedule yesterday, getting kind of an idea, you know, you're going to be playing Abbotsford the first time in that against that franchise. What was it like for you when you actually kind of saw what your 72 game schedule is going to look like for next season?
Well, kind of excited. I mean, I'm just excited to see the 72 games. Like, we've been through, I don't even know. We were at 65 or 66 couple years ago. And then last year we were down in the 50s. So yeah, it's nice to see 72 games. Yeah. And it's a little bit different. There's some different places in there, you know, like, that I haven't been to when I was with the Moose. So, yeah, you know, I think that those new arenas will bring a little bit of new life to it, and excited.
Mark Morrison, the Manitoba Moose head coach, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Mark, you spent the last 4 years as an assistant coach with the Anaheim Ducks. You know, how have you changed, you know, in your time since you were with the Manitoba Moose? Obviously, you were here as an assistant coach. You went to Anaheim to be the assistant coach at an NHL franchise. So how have you changed as a coach sort of in that time frame?
Yeah, good question. You know, when I went through the interview process, it was one of the things that, you know, they asked as well. Like, and I think the biggest thing is you realize how hard it is for a young guy to step into the NHL, like how he has to be prepared, probably more prepared than I thought when I was an assistant with the Moose before. Like, you know, NHL coaches are under the gun all the time. Everything, every single shift is a big shift. So it's really hard for young guys stepping in to get ice time in the NHL. You have to be super prepared in all those decisions that you make, you know, with the puck, through the neutral zone, turnovers. So if I've changed, it's just that I know that young kids now have to be super prepared before they step onto the ice in the NHL. It's hard. It's hard to get the trust of your NHL coach to play you.
Mark, in your media availability, I guess that was either earlier this week or last week, you know, I listened to it and you mentioned that, you know, Randy Carlyle's had a big influence on your coaching career. You also mentioned that, of course, Pascal Vincent has had a big influence on your coaching career. And, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the players that have gone through the Moose system that have gone up to the Jets. But from a fellow coach, you know, what would you say makes Pascal such a successful coach? Because as we've talked about many times, the list of players that have, you know, graduated from the Moose up to the NHL and had success it's a long list.
Yeah, for me, Pascal's biggest asset was that he had a lot of patience. He knew there was a process to everything. He had patience with everybody. He found time for everybody. And it wasn't, you know, like a player would come in with an issue. It was a problem. It wasn't a quick 30-second conversation that got him out of his office. Like, he would have the time to spend, you know, might sit in there for a half an hour, 45 minutes before practice. There was nothing that ever pressured him to be fast and quick and just get the job done. It was a long process with everybody, including staff, utilized everybody. Yeah, so for sure, I learned a lot from him.
You know, and Mark, you're talking about fast and quick. Well, you talked about pace in your media availability and how important it was for AHL players to be at an NHL pace in the AHL. But we know it's obviously the AHL game can be a lot more chaotic than the NHL. It's not as smooth a game. So how do you as a coach ensure that players are at trying to get to that NHL pace?
Yeah, I think, Dave, I think that happens. It happens more in practice. Like, you really need to drive practice as fast as they can go, and not harp on a lot of the little things, but execution with pace. I found in Anaheim was one of the biggest problems that we had in the young guys getting called up. They could keep up with the skating and the pace at times, but could they execute the passes and grab the passes and make the move and get the quick shot away at pace? No. So I think that's something that we're going to have to work on in practice. You know, if a guy overskates the puck, that's fine. We're not going to harp on that stuff, but we want him to try to make those things at full speed.
Mark Morrison, Manitoba Moosehead coach, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're part of day two coverage of the 2021 NHL draft. And I guess with the draft going on sort of in the background, Mark, how much attention are you paying to the draft today? I mean, some of these guys are clearly going to play for you, ideally, one day. So, you know, from your perspective as a head coach, you know, how much attention do you pay to these players that are being selected?
Well, yeah, like I like to know. I mean, to see who might be coming through. Maybe they bypass the Moose. I know I listened to Chaz's interview there on the TV. And, yeah, I mean, scoring-wise, sounds like he's got a great shot. He's got some leadership capabilities to him. And I heard the word teammate come up first with some friends that were discussing him online today. So real important things. And, again, something that I learned from Anaheim is the importance of when a young guy comes up, how he fits into the group and how, what a great teammate he has to be. And some of those qualities I heard yesterday about Chaz. So pretty excited about that.
You know, Mark, earlier you mentioned that, you know, you were looking at, you know, the staff of, you know, True North, Manitoba Moose, and not much has changed there. I wanted to ask you about, you know, the players. Like, we know that obviously the lineup isn't complete right now, and there's going to be a lot of movement between, you know, the AHL and the NHL. But are you at that point yet where you're kind of, you know, doing some research on some of the players that you know are going to be in the Moose system, or is that something that you're still going to wait a little bit to kind of get yourself a little bit more familiar, especially with some of the veterans that are going to be back next year?
Yeah, you know, I've got a little bit of information from some of the staff, like, you know, the equipment managers and the physios and the trainers, and to talk about some of the players, but we haven't gone over it with management yet or the other coaches to haven't gone over the roster, but starting to get a feel about just, you know, who's good in the room and a lot of the teammate stuff. But as far as the on ice product, I'm not there yet. I've got one of our staff members, Richard Bue, sending me some games on video to watch, but haven't got there with the roster yet.
Richard's the video guru for the Moose. He's a great guy. He gets it all done. No, yeah. Mark, one of the things you talked about during the media availability that I thought was real interesting, it was during your time with the Ice Caps and the idea of seeing players grow and seeing a Josh Morrissey go from what he was with you and how much joy you get from seeing Adam Lowry's development, how they've taken that step. And maybe you could just share that with our audience more who aren't maybe necessarily watching that media availability, just that idea of watching these players, these young guys come into an organization like Lowry, like Morrissey, and now seeing what they're able to do with the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, I think, you know, how to explain it for myself, it's like, and I'm sure everybody's got some of that in them, but for me, it's kind of like my my Stanley Cup, you know, it's my reward trying to help a guy. And it's not just me, like these kids, by the time they get to the Manitoba Moose, they've already had 10 or 12 people, you know, including parents and family and coaches, like all helping them. But to get that extra step out of them, I mean, I find it to build the relationship and then to be able to keep it there and help them get through. It's a great feeling. I mean, it's, I still have a relationship with guys that, went through there that, aren't in the organization anymore. And Brendan Lemieux, Jack Roslovic, you know, I talk to those guys on a weekly basis. Sometimes, you know, they'll call me and see, hey, how did I play last night? And I didn't watch their game. You know, I've got other things going on, but, it is rewarding and I like it. It's something that, I felt that I was good at and want to keep doing it.
A few more for you, Mark. Mark Morrison, new Manitoba Moose head coach, joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. You know, when it comes to a proper relationship, let's say, between an AHL franchise and the NHL franchise, there's a lot of symbiosis. There's a lot of talk that, you know, you want there to be sort of that seamless transition for players from the AHL to the NHL. To that extent, have you spoken with Paul Maurice about sort of the style that he wants, you know, that so that you guys are sort of playing a same system? We heard that a lot when Pascal Vincent was head coach, that it was easy for players to transition because the system was similar between the AHL and the NHL. So have you had any conversations with Paul about that sort of idea?
Yeah, I have had a conversation with Paul. And we will continue that process of playing the same system, speaking the same language as in the dressing room, as far as, you know, what theme we want to be and how, you know, like the words we use for pace and forechecking. And like those words, sometimes there's so many of them within systems that they have to be the same as well. We want no confusion. I mean, if the player is completely comfortable with the systems, when he gets called up, he can just worry about his own game and doesn't have to worry about every, you know, where he's supposed to be on the ice at times. So, and again, you know, from Anaheim, you know, you asked earlier about what I learned, that there, that's something else. Like if down in San Diego, they kind of play different systems. And when a player got called up, I would spend, you know, couple hours in the video room going over our systems with them, and that's too much for them to worry about when they get called up. So yeah, the same systems, the same language, that continuity between the organized, between the teams is really important. And I spoke with Paul earlier this week about it, and we'll be speaking some more, you know, as before training camp happens, and then of course a lot in training camp as well.
You know, Mark, I was talking to Dave yesterday. He mentioned that we were going to have you on today. And, you know, I was, you know, doing some research on elite prospects. And I obviously knew your coaching history with the Moose and the St. John's Ice Caps. And then before that, we talked about Victoria. But, you know, in addition to playing 10 games with the New York Rangers and a couple of 100-point seasons with Victoria in the WHL, I was trying to add up your points that you had with the Fife Flyers in the British League, and I told Dave, like, I don't know if I, like, you had let me pull it up here, but you had 155 points in your first year, including 78 goals, and you had four 100-point seasons, which is just incredible. So I just wanted to ask you, like, what stands out to you about your 11 seasons playing for the Fife Flyers?
Well, it wasn't a very good league, I'll say that. no, I mean, you know, I don't bring it up a lot. I spent about 20 years in Europe playing because I was with the Canadian Olympic team and national junior teams and traveled to Europe. So I was comfortable with going to Europe, and I don't talk about it a lot, but some of those, like I was a player coach in Fife for the 10 years, you know, and it, I don't put the coaching the Fife Flyers on my resume ever. But it does, there is some, you know, situations there that probably give you experience and dealing with European players. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, there's a connection there. If you go through all those numbers on those Fife Flyers teams, you know who played on those teams? Laurie Boschman and Doug Smale were teammates of mine there. And so there's a connection to Winnipeg.
Somebody in our chat actually mentioned that. We have I'm not sure if you can see it, but we have a chat window as well. And it looks like Craig Zamzo. So shout out to Craig. He mentioned that both you and Doug Smale posted 60 goal seasons as line mates playing in Fife a few years back.
Yeah, that's funny. And Doug always, and then Doug brought Laurie over for like a half a season or something like that over there. And I heard a lot of Winnipeg Jets stories.
You know, Mark, I just wanted to ask you about the idea of a culture of winning. You know, everybody wants to win. You're a head coach, you're competitive. Winning is so important. But development, obviously, they kind of go hand in hand. And that's the question I have. How important is having a winning culture? We saw last year with the Manitoba Moose. At the end of the season, they went on like a 13-game, you know, winning streak or point streak, I should say, because there were a couple of overtime losses. But you could just see how much more excitement there was with the players, these young guys, being in that winning culture. So how important is it? Because you can develop and not win, but how important is it for development to have a winning culture?
Well, I think, yeah, it's huge, Dave. Like, I think development, like when you have a winning culture, it's so much easier to come to the rink. It's your whole atmosphere is more upbeat. You want to work harder in practice. You want to work faster in practice. So yeah, I mean, the winning culture is huge. And I know it's hard to build when you're developing, because you know you need to put those young guys on the ice in all sorts of situations that might cost you the game, but that's them learning. But there's a fine line there, and you know, you need to always be preaching the win, because the winning culture, I would say, it's like it fast tracks the development. It's like, you know how we always, everyone always says, like, where these kids develop the most is in the playoffs, because that's the fastest hockey you can play. And, you know, that's our goal. We want to get there, and we want to play that fast paced hockey that fast tracks the development.
Mark Morrison is the new Manitoba Moose head coach. He's going to be making his way to Winnipeg in the next month or so. We look forward to seeing you on the ice as part of our Moose coverage. We do cover the Moose extensively as well, Mark, and we appreciate your time and congratulations again on your appointment as the head coach of the Manitoba Moose.
Thanks very much, guys. I enjoyed the convo, and I'm sure we'll have more. I'm going to go fishing.
Wait. What are you fishing for?
Salmon.
I was going to say, he's a former salmon king.
There you go.
But hold on. The question is, are you stream fishing, or are you offshore ocean fishing?
I'm ocean fishing.
Okay. So these are distinct questions that we have. Yeah. Oh, we can do a whole separate fishing show, Mark, anytime you want.
Yeah. Mark, we still don't have any salmon. We've got lots of walleye in Manitoba, but no salmon.
I know. I like that. I actually love ice fishing, so that's good. All right, guys.
Thank you, Mark. Take care. There he goes. Mark Morrison, Manitoba Moose head coach, joining us on the show on this Saturday morning. A great interview.
Mark just made me want to go fishing.
Yeah, I know. He's going to say that.
I'm not going to say I was eating smoked salmon before the show, but.
A little lox for breakfast there, Dave?
Someone's doing well, Drew.
I was going to say, somebody's been embezzling from the illegal curve. There's no money.
Sorry. But I had a great breakfast.
Hang on. We mentioned him earlier on the show, Josh Doan. He just went to the second most appropriate place after Winnipeg. That's to the Arizona Coyotes at number 37 overall. Oh, wow. So Shane Doan's son playing now for the Arizona Coyotes, taken in the second round, 37th overall. So that's a lot of symmetry there. That is pretty good. If you're interested in that kind of thing. But that was a hell of an interview with Mark Morrison. We're going to have it available, of course, on our YouTube channel. I'm sure Dave M will work on that. We'll have it available on our website, and it'll be available, of course, on the podcast and the replay of this show. So really nice to hear from Mark. Well-spoken, you know, seems to be quite able to follow in the footsteps of Pascal Vincent as Manitoba Moose head coaches.
Good communicators.
And that's almost what's key. I mean, I think it's key for a head coach at any level to be a good communicator, but especially in that developmental stage at the AHL level, where you're trying to really get players oftentimes to that next level, especially if they're the young guys. You know, Cole Perfetti very well might spend a lot of time with Mark Morrison this season if he's not a member of the Winnipeg Jets. So great to hear from Mark.
And I think that, Drew, is such a key point. I think that's like, you know, when you hear a guy talk about how much pride he takes in, if you're a Jets fan and you hear a guy like Mark Morrison talk about how much pride he takes in Josh Morrissey, Adam Lowry, and not just the guys who obviously end up in the Jets organization, but in Jack Roslovic, Brendan Lemieux. I suspect it was Brendan Lemieux calling and asking about what he thought of his game. That sounds like a very Brendan Lemieux thing to do. So, but that to me is the key from a development perspective. Is that that's what you want. Pascal Vincent was like that in terms of his philosophy, in terms of developing these young players, and obviously Mark Morrison in that same vein. And if you're a Jets team who relies on these players going from the AHL to the NHL as much as they do, that's going to be key for the next few years.
Exactly right. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Much more talk from the 2021 NHL draft. The Jets are about doing some simple math. They're about 13 or so picks away, so we'll be bringing you that pick when it's
about
available.
2 hours.
Hopefully not 2 hours. You know, some of us have things to do at some point in time during the course of our day. But Mark Morrison, a great guest. We'll have more great guests throughout the course of the show, and we'll also play our availability from yesterday with Chaz Lucius, the Jets' first-round pick. Much more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, our day two coverage of the 2021 NHL Draft. Looks like the Winnipeg Jets, I'm reading this now, have selected. Okay, so it doesn't look like this was a trade at all. Nikita Chibrikov, a 5'10" right winger out of Russia. He played 16 games with St. Petersburg. He plays bigger than he is. He's a skilled player with acceleration, speed, and good playmaking ability. So that is the answer for the Winnipeg Jets, is Nikita Chibrikov. Is this the first time the Jets have taken a Russian player? Certainly this high, I would think.
Well, Mikhail,
it's not the first Russian player.
No, not the first Russian, but this would be the highest they've taken a Russian player, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah.
Never mind, you know, Alex Burmistrov back in the day.
Well, Mikhail Burden.
Mikhail Burden, too.
Yeah. But he was later. So Chibrikov actually comes in at number 21 on future considerations, prospect list. So this is a guy who future considerations, and that's the draft pick list that we're using, thinks highly of. They think quite highly of him. So they had him as a first round pick. The Jets decide to take him at number 21. He played some KHL games last year. He played in the junior in Russia as well.
He's the captain of the U18 team.
Captain of the Russian U18 team, where I think it said that he got something like 9 assists, if I'm not mistaken, in the course of the U18. I think I saw that on the screen. You wonder how it's going to be when you're able to get him over to North America from Russia, because usually it's going to be not necessarily immediately. A lot of these guys, if he's a KHL player, and it sounds like he was at least briefly last year, it might take a little bit of time if he's under contract in the KHL. Maybe the Jets are sort of following along with what happened with Kirill the Thrill in Minnesota, although I think Kirill was a first round pick, if I recall correctly, and seeing if he could end up being someone that eventually comes and makes an impact on the Jets roster.
Just to answer your question, Drew, the highest picks by the Jets of Russian players, Mikhail Burden was a 6th round pick, and Pavel Krevkovsky was a 7th rounder.
Who they never signed, if I recall correctly. Yeah. So we will see.
I'm gonna Dale Fat.
I'm sorry, Krevkovsky was a 7th-6th rounder as well.
Well, forgive you.
Daniel Dale fact check you. Kaprizov was actually a 5th round pick. So he was not a 1st round pick, but it seems like he's a 1st round pick because he won the Calder Trophy. But, another thing to factor in here, guys, as Dave pumps out a little content for a little site called thelegalcurve.com, he's a guy that obviously we don't expect to step into the NHL, but you expect that if he was the captain of the U18 team, he's most likely going to be at the 2022 World Juniors, factoring in big time for Russia. So we expect, there's a good chance Cole Perfetti will play for Team Canada as well. And as you mentioned, Drew, number 19 on future considerations list. So it looks like, again, the Jets have maybe got, I'm not going to say the word, but a player that many expected to be a late first rounder, early second rounder here. And just reading the scouting report from future considerations, they call him a skilled playmaker that has fearlessness in his game.
And the things that he needs to improve is the consistency of his effort and his support in his own end. So the Jets, not really a name that we expected there. Who knows? Nikita Chibrikov is the Jets' second round selection. I'll be honest, I'm not sure if we're going to be able to get him on the show or not. What time is it in Russia? It's probably about 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night in Russia right now. I'm not entirely sure. We shall see if we are able to be joined by Nikita Chibrikov.
Out of the three of us, who's Russian is the best? Probably I'd say Dave M. All I can say is Nyet.
Yeah, that would be
I know a ton of Russian swear words because when I was many, many moons ago a counselor, there were a lot of Russian immigrants. So they taught me all the bad words. So I know a lot of bad words.
And did you teach them English bad words or did you already know? No, did they know those already? Russian bad words. Okay.
You're good with the Russian bad words.
At least you're a responsible counselor in that way.
I've tried them on Mikhail Burden. He liked them.
Here's what Chris Peters of the United States of Hockey, formerly ESPN, good friend of the show, says about Nikita Chibrikov. The most skilled player available, I don't think he means in the entire draft. I think he meant at this point in the draft. And one of the draft's best playmakers. He's got a little bit of a mean streak. He's under contract with SKA in the KHL until 2022-23. Chris Peters had him number 15 on his list. So, when you factor that in with the Chaz Lucius pick, the Jets get Chris Peters, number 10 and number 15 players at number 18 and number 50. So very interesting that there are some players, both Nikita, that the future considerations guys, Chris Peters, they're both quite high on Nikita Chibrikov, who the Jets were able to just pick at number 50. So very interesting to see what develops with him. Over the course of the next number of years. Obviously, he won't be here for a while under contract in Russia for at least another couple seasons. Then we'll see if he's able to become a member of the Winnipeg Jets. Saturday morning, you're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, day two coverage of the NHL draft. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. The New York Islanders have just taken Atu Ratu at number 52 overall. So a guy that thought that maybe the Jets were going to jump on him. Instead, the Jets take Chibrikov after they took Chaz Lucius last night in the first round of this draft. A lot of interesting developments so far on this Saturday morning. There's been a number of trades. There's things going on along those lines that are very interesting so far. A lot of people praising the Winnipeg Jets for their selection of Nikita Chibrikov. A lot of people have him ranked quite high. Craig Button, our good friend, thank you, Frosty Winnipeg, for chiming in the chat. He had Chibrikov ranked at number 26. So certainly higher than the Winnipeg Jets got him. He led the under-18s with 9 assists. He was named the top 3 player on his team, and he helped Russia to a silver medal. So a very interesting selection by the Winnipeg Jets, maybe getting some late value there. Corey Pronman had him number 14. Scott Wheeler had him number 28, and Bob McKenzie had him number 24. And as Frosty in the chat mentioned, Craig Button had him at number 26. So, certainly there seems to be some good value there. Maybe he dropped because he was under contract in the KHL for a couple more years. But whatever the reason, the Jets appear, and I'm putting an asterisk next to that,
don't appear to have
got some value. I'm not saying the word. It's too soon. Nobody knows if they did or not. But they seem to have got some value so far in their selection of Chibrikov.
Absolutely. And it's fascinating, guys, right? To kind of, like, as you mentioned, like, does his KHL contract factor in? Like, what I really like about him, he's not a big player. I believe he's 5'10", 5'11". You know, what I like is that, you know, you read the scouting reports, because as you mentioned, like, none of us have ever watched him play. And obviously, you know, we're going to try to watch some highlights and everything like that as we, you know, bring, our viewers and readers more information about him. But, you wonder if there was something about his game, you know, that just scouts didn't like, or as we mentioned, you know, the contract factors in. But yeah, when you have like Chris Peters having him at 15 and you have, you know, Craig Button, you know, having him going in the first round, the Jets got him in the late second round here, guys. And, you know, we've seen this so many times with the Jets amateur scouting staff. They've been able, to get players that fall. Henry Nikkanen, right? Dave was another guy, that was supposed to be kind of a second, third rounder. And
well, originally he was even seen as potentially as a first.
Right. And then he had, I believe it was the injuries, right, that kind of derailed the season there. Yeah. So, it's going to be interesting to kind of read more about him and, get to know him. As you mentioned, we're not sure, you know, if we're going to be able to talk to him, because I assume, again, that, you know, there might be a translator involved.
Yeah, there might be a language issue, but if there isn't and he's able to join us, we'll be glad to welcome him to the program. Reading another tweet here from Greg Wyshynski, now of ESPN, he said that his stock plummeted, Chibrikov's stock plummeted because he had a bad game against Canada in a World Junior tournament, and that's what led to his him dropping down some draft boards. If it was that easy and if that was the reason, then, you know, maybe the Jets did indeed get a bit of a steal in acquiring Chibrikov, but time will tell on that factor.
I can tell you, I'm going to be calling him Chibisov for Andre Chibisov, who the Jets signed and played for them for 1 year, or played for the Moose, a couple games with the Jets. I think there'll be a lot of Chibikov and Chibisov and
Chibrikov. Yeah, there's a lot of going to have to keep track of all the different names, but that's an ongoing concern, I would suggest, and a good problem to have if and when it comes to that issue. But it will be interesting. The Jets obviously liked them. For a team not used to going to Russia early in the draft, the Jets decided to go that way and obviously find I think there's a lot of talent within the selection of Andre Chibrikov at that point in time, right? I got that right?
Yeah, and same thing goes for Atu Ratu, who goes two picks later to the New York Islanders, right? And kind of reminds me a little bit of Josh Hosang, right, who the Islanders also took. He was expected to go much earlier, in the months leading up to the draft, and then that's what happens, right? Like, draft players, their stock goes down, 2 weeks, 4 weeks before the draft. So again, we haven't seen him play, but, you know, it's going to be interesting. As we mentioned, like, the scouting report from Future Consideration says skilled player who plays with fearlessness. And Chris Peters mentioned also he's got a nasty streak to him. So I think a lot of Jets fans are going to be excited for a guy that could not only put the puck in the net, but, he's a guy that can mix it up as well.
Precisely right. You know, Scott Billick is going to join us, I believe, any moment now. So why don't we take a quick break? When we come back, our buddy Scott Billick is going to join us. Much more to come. The Jets are next scheduled to pick 82nd overall. So there's going to be a little bit of time in between. Hopefully things will speed up a little bit as we get into the second, late in the second and early in the third of the 2021 NHL draft. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platform. Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, the birthday boy himself, Ezra Ginsberg, Billick of the Winnipeg Sun joins us, Scotty, on the program.
How's it going?
Mustard shots for everyone this morning?
Well, yeah, no, I should. Yeah, I'm on my Wi-Fi. I guess my vaccine is wearing off. My 5G is not working very well. So. Yeah, no. How's it going, guys?
Good, Scotty. How you doing, yeah, brother? Nice to see you. Thanks for joining us, obviously. Yeah. Day two coverage of the 2021 NHL draft. Sounds like the Winnipeg Jets, you know, got a couple of I'm not going to use the word steal, but a couple value picks based on where these guys were ranked among some other players. So, you know, I know you've been keeping a very close eye on Nikita Chibrikov, and you've watched all of his games in the KHL Junior League. So, you know, what can you tell us from your viewings of him? No, I'm kidding. I don't want to.
Yeah, exactly. Not a ton, right? Because that's the thing, right? I mean, we haven't seen a lot of these guys play. I mean, we look at Chaz Lucius from yesterday. I mean, the guy didn't even play last year, right? I mean, it's just one of those weird things with... No, he played last year, but...
Played a little, but he was injured for a lot of the year.
Right, and then, you know, and then I haven't even learned the guy's name, Chibrikov. You know, it is just... It's such a weird draft, right? Like, it's such a strange draft because, you know, most of us haven't seen it. I mean, I'm going off of, you know, people's... what people say. I mean, Lucius, obviously, great goal scorer. I mean, we've seen, you know, you've seen highlights of him, that sort of thing. Chibrikov, I mean, you know, it depends who you talk to. I mean, I think Corey Pronman from The Athletic says he's the best pick of day two. You know, this is kind of one of those things where, okay, I guess we'll see. I mean, who knows? It's one of those weird drafts. Well, it's such a... It's the only draft, I think, in our lifetime that will list, like, this one will be such a, there's probably going to be steals up and down, you know, the rounds, and we just don't know who they are yet, because it's going to be interesting to exactly see who actually pans out here. So, but at the same time, you know, based on what the scouts know from the first round of the draft, Chaz Lucius wasn't supposed to get to the Jets. I mean, I read a lot of different things that said he would go roughly in the top 10. And, you know, the Jets get him at 18, technically, I guess 17 with Arizona not having a pick there. But, yeah, I mean, you know, for a second straight year, the Jets get a guy who probably shouldn't have fallen to him, as they did kind of last year with Cole Perfetti. And you know, I don't know how you guys kind of thought going into the draft what the Jets would target, but you know, when you get a player that falls kind of into your lap like that, I think you just got to take the skill over whatever. And then, yeah, you know, when it comes to Chibrikov, yeah, I mean, I think that's just one of those things where, you know, you get a guy that, you know, you just take the best player that you can. And see, and I know a lot of people have talked about, well, maybe should the Jets be drafting defensemen here? And I would argue, I mean, they have a pretty good prospect pool of defensemen, albeit a lot of them are left-handed shots, that sort of thing. But, you know, I think you got to also replenish to kind of the forward prospect pool because you used a lot of those guys too. So, yeah, it's an interesting draft. I mean, we'll see if the Jets pick up. I think they have two more picks, right, in this one. And as long as, you know, they don't make any trades and that sort of thing, you know, that's all they'll have. But I don't know. I mean, it's been interesting to watch just guys go what the pundits are saying about it and that sort of thing. And, you know, what you're getting in these late rounds. And one of the, you know, kind of things with the Jets when it comes to the draft is they've been able to find the, you know, these quote unquote diamonds in the rough later on in the draft, you know, the fifth round Connor Hellebuck, that sort of thing. So, it's interesting, and I think this is the draft this year is the one prime for it, for those types of picks, because, you know, I just think it's been a very tough year to evaluate talent. I mean, I know Kevin Sheveldae said they watched a lot of video and all that stuff leading into the draft, but you know, I think there's a lot of this too. It's, I don't want to say luck, but kind of like calculated luck, right? That you're just kind of hoping that, you know, your scouting and whatever you did see was good enough. And then sometimes it's just like, yeah, I mean, this is the guy that we think will be there. And then that's largely the draft in general. But I think this year it's even more pronounced.
Well, you know, yeah, Scotty, sorry, Ezzy, let me just jump in there for a second. Obviously, there must have been a spirited debate going on at the Jets draft table because they took a timeout there. And usually, you know, oftentimes you see a timeout and that leads to a trade because, you know, you need to finalize the details or whatever. But in this case, it just led to the Jets selecting Chibrikov. And we obviously don't know the intricacies of that debate, but clearly you can piece it together that there must have been some, not significant, but must have been some debate going on in the Jets room about selecting Chibrikov or someone else before Chibrikov obviously became their selection.
Yeah, and you know that's it. I always wonder if the kind of the Russian player always, you know, fits into that, because there's always the worry with that. I mean, I remember listening to that. Is it Svechkov? I always want to say Svechnikov.
Fedor Svechkov.
Fedor, yeah. And I thought there was, if I'm not mistaken, kind of leading into the draft, there was some kind of worry, right? You know, it just because of, you know, is he going to play in the KHL or that sort of thing? And so, but yeah, I think there is a bit of worry. But, you know, we've seen, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff, and there used to be that kind of worry, I think, too, about American players, right? Because they can go the college route and then if they want to, you know, they can basically play out their years there and then turn into a UFA. But I mean, again, he takes Chaz Lucius, you know, 18th overall and from the U.S. national program. The guy's going to the University of Minnesota. So he's, I think, you know, they take the players that they think they are, you know, the best players at their position and they go from there and you kind of work it out. And Jets have done a good job at that, you know, by and large. I mean, if you look at a lot of the roster, it's those drafted and developed type of players in terms of, you know, getting good talent, developing it and turning into it. And, you know, if you see, I mean, depending who you believe, if you look at the expansion draft, I mean, you know, the Jets lost one of the players that they drafted and developed and it looked like that they wanted Logan Stanley too, or Seattle might've wanted Logan Stanley, other teams also too, again, another player that they did. So, it's good to have those kind of assets and you know, in the end, you know, it kind of shows kind of, you know, the power of the draft and you know, Mason Appleton was a later round pick. So anyway, I'm just rambling on that sort of thing. But
that's okay. You fit in seamlessly with the rest of us. That's what we've been doing for the last, the majority of the last couple of nights.
Right. Yeah.
No, Scotty, just getting away from, you know, the NHL draft here for a second, you mentioned the expansion draft, obviously that, you know, just took place and, you know, the second day of the draft is going to wrap up and then quickly, you know, we're going to get into free agency before we know it. Right. And we know that not only do the Jets have a few free agents that they've got to sign, a few RFAs, but, you know, we're expecting, you know, if Chevy doesn't acquire a defenseman via free agency, then, you know, it's probably going to be via trade. So, you know, what do you see? What's the first shoe that's going to drop here? Is it going to be, you know, Neil Pionk signing his contract? We expect it to be probably, you know, 5 to 7 years here, maybe eight, but I think it'll probably be somewhere around there. And then Andrew Kopp, obviously, that's the, you know, the big kind of piano that's, you know, hanging over everyone's head right now, right? But what do you see happening here? Or do you see, you know, a defenseman being acquired before the Jets lock up their two big RFAs here?
Well, I mean, I think if you're looking for some of the big names, you know, I think those are the guys that are going to be the ones that are going first. I mean, I'm interested. I mean, you know, I don't think they're getting Dougie Hamilton because I just don't think he's going to sign here. I mean, that's just kind of thing. Would you love Dougie Hamilton to sign here? I think so. But, you know, that's a guy who's going to get, you know, 7 years and a huge contract, right? So it'd be interesting. You know, I think the Jets are going to be targeting a defenseman first. I mean, I think Neil Pionk. I don't think there's a huge rush there. I mean, you want to, but it looks like both sides want to be here and that sort of thing. The Kopp situation is different. I mean, you're going to have to hash out, but what each side wants and figure it out. I don't think this one gets to Arb, but you know, I think if it gets to Arb, it's a bad thing. I mean, I think that they. I think that just one's a little more touchy, right? I mean, it depends what you want. I was talking about this with Hustler earlier, in the week. And it's like, it'll be interesting. I'm going kind of off on here on what Kopp earns, right? You look at that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins deal, like 5.1 AAV. I mean, that kind of sewered what Kopp probably thinks he should get, because Nugent-Hopkins is just puts up more points, right? And so is Andrew Kopp a $5 million player, which, you know, seems to be the high end of what a lot of people might believe he's the guy. So I don't know. I think it's in that $4 to $4.5 million deal. I mean, I think you also look at what Adam Lowry signed for, and then you kind of wonder. But I do think Andrew Kopp has more value up and down the lineup potentially than an Adam Lowry does, just because he's a little more of a Swiss Army knife. We've seen him on the top line. We've seen him all everywhere, right? So, yeah. But I think those things are going to take time. I think the Jets the Pionk deal, I think it just figures itself out, and then the Kopp one, you know, we'll see. But I think you got to start. If you want to improve this team in free agency and you think you have a shot with maybe a Hamilton, but probably not, but like David Savard or one of those guys, I mean, you got to go, because those guys are going to be gone quick. You know, I think this is the offseason where you're trying to get those guys that you need. I mean, we've seen some weird deals. And that's the other thing that's interesting. I mean, I don't know what you think about that Vancouver trade or you know, the Philly trade. I mean, there's a lot of trading going on, you know, interesting stuff. Well, yeah, but I mean, but like the prices seem astronomical. I mean, you see the Seth Jones deal. I mean, holy moly. I mean, you're giving up, you know, as for a rebuilding team, I mean, you're giving up two first rounders, a second, whatever it all ended up being there. It seems insane, but, so I don't know if you're getting it through trades either. And I think, you know, you're targeting a guy like, well, you don't have to target Rist Island anymore because he's already gone. But, you know, David Savard, I mean, we talked about him a lot before the trade deadline, about the Jets going and seeing if they could get him, acquiring him. He obviously went to the Lightning. Good on him. Won the Stanley Cup. But, you know, maybe a guy like Brandon Montour. I've liked Brandon Montour for a long time. I think he's putting the raw end of the stick. In Buffalo, I think a lot of people, you know, have when you go to Buffalo. It's just it's been a, you know, rough, you know, a few seasons there for that team. So I don't mind a Montour that's kind of like a lower pairing guy. And then you got to evaluate: are you playing Billy Hainaan next year? Are you playing Dylan Sandberg, maybe to a lesser extent there? Where does Logan Stanley fit now? Is he moving up into your top four? Does he play with Neil Pionk? And then do you just kind of find a, you know, what are you doing with Tucker Pullman? It doesn't seem like they're going to re-sign Tucker Pullman as a UFA, but, you know, do you bring him back and have him as your third pairing guy? That's the thing, right? And you're kind of trying to figure out where your own guys are at. And I think Ville Heine plays a significant role this year on the Jets defense, but it will also depend, you know, can you land a David Savard? And then that changes the math, right? I mean, it's just, you don't have the room. You know, a lot of people yesterday, like, well, why didn't the Jets, you know, go out and get Jake Bean, you know, for a second round pick? Well, problem is just, you would have you don't need a left-handed defenseman. I mean, you already have four, maybe five, you know, vying for a spot on the defense right now. They really need right-handed shots, and so that's the guy that they'll be, you know, trying to find, because, you know, after Pionk and obviously DeMello, I mean, you need that third guy, and maybe DeMello doesn't play with Morrissey if you get a guy like David Savard. But yeah, so it's interesting, but I think they go for the defenseman that they need first before the defenseman that they kind of already have in Pionk, because I think that deal is going to be one of those kind of amicable ones. Like they'll sort that one out, and then the Kopp one, you know, it could go down to the wire, right? And you know, as you know, people will say what they will about Kurt Overhart, he's a good agent for the player, and that's what you want if you're the player, right? You know, you want to get your max value, you want to do that sort of thing. I think the Jets make room for Andrew Kopp, and they give him, I mean, you could see last year his value, and every year Andrew Kopp takes a step forward. I mean, that's my belief. I've watched him since he got here, as you guys have. Every year, he gets better as a player. I don't think this was a flash-in-the-pan year, contract year. He'd played out of his mind, and he's going to go back. No, like, I think this is a guy who was motivated. We've all seen Andrew Kopp. He's a shredded dude. I mean, he's always ready and he's always, you know, trying to improve as a player. So, I just think that's just kind of, that's the player that you want on your team. And I think the Jets have to make room for him because he's almost captain material, right? I mean, I don't think he is the next captain of this team. After Blake is gone, it's probably Shifley, if he's, you know, depending on how that works out. I think Andrew Kopp he personifies what your team wants to be. And I don't think you want to lose a guy like that.
You know, Scott, the speaking of, you know, filling holes, and everybody's focused on the defense, and there's still kind of a question mark up front, though, of course, because, you know, in terms of top four wingers, you know, yeah. Right now, in theory, you've got Wheeler, Ehlers, Connor, question mark.
Yeah.
And now, as per Darren Dreger, the NHL, CHL are working out a deal to allow an exemption for players like Cole Perfetti to potentially play in the NHL next, and sorry, the AHL next season. Obviously, he can play in the NHL next season if he's able to make the team.
Yeah.
But isn't that such a huge luxury for this Winnipeg Jets squad to have a player like Cole Perfetti, who obviously, like everybody knows, was able, what he was able to do last year with the Manitoba Moose, but now to have that luxury to say, listen, we can try him. We can try him and Christian Vesalainen. We can platoon those guys in that second line. If they can't do it, we can put Andrew Kopp there. But the point is, it gives the Jets another option out of training camp for Cole Perfetti that if he's just not ready for prime time, hey, we can send you down to the Moose. You keep doing what you were doing last season with Manitoba, and then you'll earn your way back up here.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think if as long as that goes through, the Jets are dancing because that's what they want, right? And, you know, as much as Kevin Cheveldayoff said, oh, he loves the Junior Hockey League, like, that's great. Yeah, we all know that. But some guys are just beyond that league. And Cole Perfetti is obviously one of them because if you look at how he played in the AHL last year, if he went back this year, sure, he probably scores 50, 60 goals and has that great stat line in his final year of junior. Good on him. But I don't think he gets better there. And that's the thing. So I don't know, because if you think Cole Perfetti, I mean, there's talk that, you know, this guy could play wing in the NHL. And, you know, that's the same thing with the Chaz Lucius, right? I mean, both of those guys are, they're centers, but, you know, it's possible that those guys play wing in the NHL. So there might even be, and I know it's probably not going to happen, just how we know how this team operates with their young talent. But I also think Cole Perfetti probably gets, you know, those first eight or nine games, right, at the start of the year, if they don't have other options there, or if Cole Perfetti just looks really good in training camp, which, again, having played in the AHL last year and done as well as he did, you know, there is a good chance that Cole Perfetti could push for a spot if they're going to play him at wing here. What a boon that would be, obviously. But at the same time, if it doesn't work out, and as long as this little CHL deal goes through, you know, it sucks for the OHL teams, especially, right, that don't get some of their best players back. But at the same time, I mean, because of the pandemic, all that stuff, be able to send Cole Perfetti back to the AHL and let him, you know, kind of marinate there and get better. I mean, it's not even marinating. I mean, you know, to kind of develop there and get better. I mean, that's huge. I mean, and that's just one of those things that, you know, at the end of the season this year, like, you know, are they really gonna, you know, send some of these guys back? It's such a weird thing. And now that they're finally talking about that, it's great that, you know, because some of these guys, they did perform well. And there'll be guys that want to go back to junior too. I mean, maybe that's just where they need to be. They didn't pan out as much in the AHL and it was a tough year and you want to get that extra year and that sort of thing. But I think Cole Perfetti, I mean, you know, the pandemic hasn't brought a lot of good things for anybody, but, you know, for the Jets, it brought Cole Perfetti and you got to see this guy play in a pro game. And then, go, you know, played well enough that he got a spot on the, you know, the world championship team. Again, another men's tournament, you know, that sort of thing. So and it leaves the option open. He goes to juniors, you know, he can still go to world juniors. That sort of thing. I mean, we saw that, you know, that might be controversial too. We saw that with Ville Heinola and people are like, you know, why isn't he in training camp and, you know, fighting for a roster spot, you know? So that'll be another interesting storyline too, if that is the case that they do that. But you know, just having the ability, you know, to send them to the AHL and then potentially bring them up if there's an injury. I mean, that's huge because if you went back to the OHL, you wouldn't have that luxury. And so, Yeah, I like the idea. I hope they do that. I think it's fair, you know, kind of given the season that was last year. And, you know, I think for the Jets, maybe more than a lot of teams, it's a huge boon. Yep.
Drew, you're muted. Come on, Drew.
Yeah.
Oh, you just dropped yourself off even better.
Sorry, there we go. I'm back. I pressed the mute button and then I pressed the remove myself button. Viewership
just went up there. I saw
that's true. Get rid of me and just skyrockets up. I know. It's true. I can't argue with that point there. In case people were wondering if we're through the second round of the NHL draft, we're not. It's still the second round. It's
still going.
Yeah. It's still going on. At this rate, I saw this on Twitter. I believe the seven rounds of the draft at the pace that they're going will end tonight at about 10:30 p.m.
Oh, my God. So, pick 60, in. Drew. Yeah, number 60 right now.
When did it end last year?
No, 61. Sean Perrins just went as a guy. Sean Perrins,
I know it was forever, but, like, does anybody remember?
Last year they did the whole thing in one day, remember?
No, I realize, but I'm saying, at what point did it end? It felt like it was because normally, traditionally, boys, as you know, when we're at these drafts, we're usually done. We have some responsibilities after by 2 o'clock, maybe 3 at the latest. But I feel like last year it was like 5 or 6 or something like that.
The sibling love, the Chicago Blackhawks just took Colton Dock, brother of Kirby. So, you know, a family affair going to be in Chicago. You got the Jones brothers there and you got the Dock brothers there. So between the Hughes brothers in New Jersey, it's apparently you got a draft siblings day.
Like a good band name, Dock and Jones.
That means the Jets are going to have to draft Chaz Lucius's brother next season.
Is he draft eligible next year?
I believe so.
Okay.
Either next year or the year after. So, he was talking about his brother. His brother was in Michigan with him yesterday when he was when we did our interview with him, and I was watching afterwards. He was talking about his brother and what a big influence he's had on him and being able to play with him. So the Jets may go down that route as well.
Time will tell when that happens, but hopefully by next year.
We're not still on air.
Yeah, hopefully the draft will be done by that point in time. Time will tell because it's certainly they're not going quick, especially when you factor in all these timeouts and everything else. But hopefully the third round will begin to pick it up a little bit. You know, Scotty, it's been a very busy few days in the NHL. Did you have one move in particular, be it a trade or a signing, that you liked more than anyone else? I mean, is it Buffalo getting a first round pick and a second round pick? For Rasmus Ristolainen? That one's the one that sort of made everybody's eyes bug out of their head a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good deal. I'm interested in the Vancouver deal. They gave up a lot, right? And there's a lot of, but they got rid of a lot of, you kind of trim the fat, I suppose. I'm interested on the Vancouver deal because it say what you want about Oliver Ekman-Larsson or it fixes one of the problems that they needed on defense for now. I mean, I'd be interested to see what Oliver Ekman-Larsson is in a different city. Again, Arizona, they're better obviously than Buffalo, but I think sometimes it's just, but Connor Garland, I think, is the big one on that deal. That fixed a problem on forward that they needed. But again, I don't think it's the deal itself, like, I'm so shocked at some of these deals, just the price. I mean, if you look at the Seth Jones deal, I mean, that one was bad. But I think Florida got better. I mean, I like Sam Reinhart going to Florida. I think that was a good deal for the Panthers. I'm fine with what they paid for it. None of those issues. I like that deal a lot. I liked what Vegas was able to do too, because they're exempt. And people are mad, right? And because Vegas is exempt from the expansion draft and all that, and because they've been so good for the last 3 years, people are like, oh, right, But expectation was that Vegas wouldn't be where they are right now, right? I mean, because you look at expansion for teams of old. And they were horrible for the first little while of and all that. So you're hoping, you don't want to take from the team that's trying to rebuild and all that stuff. Well, I mean, you'd be super pumped if you're Seattle and got to take a Vegas player at this point. It's interesting, kind of what they were doing, just trading away, getting Nolan Patrick. I'm interested on Nolan Patrick. Kelly McCrimmon obviously knows Nolan Patrick very, very well. Given that he was in Brandon at the same time that Nolan Patrick played there, it almost feels like one of those things like, here, well, come over here. We're going to rebuild you better. It hasn't worked out in Philly. You've been injured, all that kind of stuff. And then it's like, come here. We'll sort it out. And you know, they give up Cole Kolas for that. I mean, so it's interesting to me what they think that Nolan Patrick could be there. And maybe that's the most interesting one for me because, and it happened, you know, several days ago now, but I'm interested because, I mean, you're looking there. I mean, is Chandler Stephenson your top line center? Do they see Nolan Patrick being, I don't know. I mean, what do they see? But I mean, Nolan Patrick has played reasonably well at times when he's not injured.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know if that he's developed well enough there. I think he probably came to the NHL a little bit too early. And then obviously had, you know, his injury problems and that sort of thing. So yeah, I mean that one's interesting. But I like the Sam Reinhart deal to Florida. Like I think Florida, you know, is that team. They're going to be pretty good. I like them. I mean, I know Bob is, you know, up and down on that sort of thing. They lost Chris Dreger. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it was probably their future there, but who knows? I mean, Bob still got what, you know, 6 years, 5 or 6 years left on the deal that he signed.
And it sounds like Devin Levy is also included in that trade. That trade hasn't been officially announced, but
yeah,
to your point, it's like, you know, the other goaltender of the future sounds like he's going to Buffalo in that deal.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's sort of the thing, right? I mean, it'd be interesting. I like what Florida's doing. I like what they're finally, you know, trying to give Barkov some options and that sort of thing. I like that, you know, it seems like Joel Quenneville has kind of rejuvenated that team a little bit, put in kind of a winning mentality of what to do. And we saw that. I mean, obviously they didn't, you know, fare well against the Lightning this year, but I still think that they're a team on the up, and you add a guy like Sam Reinhart. I don't even know if he's missed an NHL game yet in his career. I mean, the guy is so, I really like Sam Reinhart. He's just like that kind of lunchbox kind of guy who does a lot of great things very well, and very good analytically, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, that one probably it for me. I think I was so interested on too, and wasn't a trade obviously, but the whole Carey Price thing, how Montreal kind of dangled that, because I'm not sure. Like, I mean, if you're Montreal, I think you're hoping Seattle kind of takes that contract, right? I mean, I get that Carey Price is your guy, and he's been, you know, the cornerstone of your franchise ever since you drafted him. He's won a Hart there. You just went to the Stanley Cup Finals with him, and that sort of thing. But man, that contract hurts. You know, $10.5 million. I think you owe. I mean, not even the signing bonus of $11 million that they owe him. I think it's September 1st or something like that. But you know, yeah, I think that was the other one. Obviously it didn't happen, and Seattle was smart, I think, in that to not take on such a big contract like that. But you know, I thought that was quite interesting leading up to like who was dangled in front of, you know, Seattle, like, please take this guy, you know, almost sort of thing. But yeah, anyways, it was interesting.
Yeah, and Scotty, just a few more questions for you here. And obviously, you know, earlier we were talking about Andrew Kopp and Neil Pionk, the big RFAs. Like, what do you see happening with some of the UFAs? Like, the one to me that I'm kind of curious to see how they go with is Tucker Poolman, right? Because we know that there's a good chance the Jets bring in someone on the right side. We know right now, like, on the depth chart, it's obviously Pionk, DeMello, 1-2, and Poolman's 3. So what do you kind of see happening with Poolman? And do you see any of those other UFAs coming back? Like, is there a chance that, you know, a Matty Perreault can come back, or a Paul Stastny can come back? Or do you see those guys, you know, testing the free agent waters and, you know, taking, you know, the best deal available from whatever team is most interested in them?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, right? I mean, we talked about a lot about Paul Stastny and kind of his impact on this team. And I thought it was significant, both kind of on and off the ice for the Jets. I mean, you know, everybody will remember when he kind of basically came out and said, you know, what the issues with the team were, and you know, that was a veteran move that even, you know, this team's captain didn't seem to kind of, at least in externally, come out and say and kind of, you know, I guess put the spotlight on, you know, what had happened during that time. And that was obviously in the midst of their losing streak there at the end of the season. So, you know, I just don't know if the price is right for a guy like Stastny. And for Stastny, I mean, depends. I mean, do you want to move? I mean, I don't know if he has a home here or anything like that. But, I mean, does he want to take less? I don't know. And for Tucker Poolman, you know, to kind of go back to the guy you led with there, I just don't know if there's room for him. I don't think Tucker Pullman's the guy that you want to sign. Maybe he's your 7th D, sure. Does he want that role? Exactly, right? I mean, and could he find that somewhere else? I mean, could he go play for the Wild? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's one of those. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I don't. My gut feeling is they don't re-sign Tucker Pullman. Maybe they sign a guy like Trevor Lewis if they could. I think if you look at kind of the Montreals or even the Lightnings and that sort of thing, you know, it is important to have kind of those veteran fourth line guys that have done it before, whether it's the Patty Maroons or the Corey Perrys or whatever. You know, guys like that that are, you know, still somewhat skilled that can do, you know, some damage. Obviously, Corey Perry, I think, was a little bit of a, you know, an anomaly there because he was part of, during the Jets series, at least, probably the best line that the Canadians had against the Jets at one point. They just frustrated him and Eric Staal and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm interested to see that. But other than like kind of depth, like forward guys, like maybe like a Trevor Lewis or something like that, you know, whatever. I don't think Nate Thompson's back. You know, I think at some point you got to play David Gustafson finally, finally. And I think he's kind of earned that. And I mean, I don't know, Dave will agree with that for sure. Yeah, but it's one of those, it's time to let some of the young guys kind of go, and take over the reins here. But I'm also cognizant of the fact that this team believes there's a 3-year window before the likes of Mark Scheifele and you know, Connor Hellebuyck and Blake Wheeler, these contracts are up, and then you don't know where your team's at after that. If you don't re-sign these guys, you start rebuilding, who knows? It depends if you win a Stanley Cup or not. So you can't just, you can't put all the young guys in, but I think David Gustafson's earned his shot. So that means you probably don't need Nate Thompson anymore. And then what do you do? I mean, you know, Matty Perreault is not here anymore, but you have Dominic Toninato. We'll have to see what Dominic Toninato looks like. He didn't play a whole lot. He was impressive in the few games he was able to play this season. I think you got to look at, Jansen Harkins. You saw Christian Vesalainen waiting, kind of for his kind of full thing, and these guys seem I think Christian Vesalainen is ready. I think he's ready to come in and play that Mason Appleton role. It might be a different looking. It's not going to be driving to net maybe all the time, but I think Christian Vesalainen brings more skill to the lineup. And if, again, given the opportunity to display that skill, I think there's something there. So, for the UFAs, I mean, you're probably getting some veteran presence on the fourth line. We know Paul Maurice likes that. Is it Trevor Lewis again? Is it, whoever? I like Trevor Lewis during the season. I thought he was just a steady guy. And that's what the Jets need on that fourth line, is steady guys, at times where that line, Paul Maurice trusted that line. I don't think you want to bring back the same guys. And obviously you're not bringing back Perreault. It would be on a very cheap deal. You need a fourth line that you can trust on this team because it helped out spread the minutes out a little better throughout the lineup during the season when that line was playing. So, and then, yeah, Tucker Pullman, I mean, unless he wants to be a seventh defenseman or the Jets just swing and miss in free agency and can't get a trade done, and then that's your thing. I mean, I guess that's kind of your kind of doomsday button, sort of thing, right? Like, that's like the we missed on everything. We got to bring, that would be less than ideal, I think, for the Jets who are really hoping to, connect with one of those swings this year. But yeah, I think Tucker Pullman's going to find a home somewhere else where he's probably going to play more minutes and not have to be that kind of seventh defenseman.
Now, Scott, if you go to Cap Friendly right now, you see the Jets have a big old pile of cash, $21 million in cap, but the reality, as you just talked about, Pionk, Kopp, a lot of guys need new deals.
Right.
So one area that's interesting is goaltending in terms of, Ken talked about it last night when we did cover the first round, the idea of Brassois. Will a team like Carolina, who's now kind of in goaltending limbo, come calling for him to give him more of an opportunity? And if you're the Jets, if you can shave a little bit, because Brassois is going to be looking for, pay upgrade. So if you're the Jets and you think, okay, well, we'd rather not invest, you know, $2 million in our goaltender when we've got Mikael Burden, who signed it, I think $750, and Arvid Holm, yeah, was around $874. So you've got, and I didn't realize Kenny wrote about that in his column on Sportsnet, that Arvid Holm's plans would be to come over here to North America after playing in the Swedish league. So he'll either be available, obviously, for the Jets or the Moose. You've got Eric Comrie, who's an unrestricted free agent now because of not playing enough games this season. So how do you see that sort of playing out? I know the fit with Brossoit is good. We know he likes, you know, his relationship with Connor Hellebuyck. But if you had to put on your prognostication hat, do you see Brossoit back with this Jets team, or do you think that's an area where they think, hey, we can shave $1 million and use it somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, I think you see him back if it's just kind of a one-year deal and you're hoping that Burden will be the backup, you know, kind of come maybe next season. I'm just looking at the list now of UFA goalies and kind of who you could kind of bring in, if not him, and what the money would be. I mean, I you know, for the guys that cost a lot less, it's not a great list, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and then the guys that cost more, you know, I don't know, like, you know, what is a Yaro Halak? I mean, Yaro Halak's going to get paid somewhere, I think. Maybe James Reimer, he can come in, play
Reimer
here.
Reimer seems to be a guy that makes sense, given the more arena ties and everything.
Right, and I think James Reimer comes in on a reasonably, well, I don't know, that's the other thing, too. I mean, he still won 15 games last year, Reimer, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I don't know. I mean, Antti Raanta, he's 32. Devin Dubnyk's 35. I mean, you know, maybe he just wants to, you know, I don't know. That it's a good question. I think they're going to probably have to spend, though, this year on that backup, unless they want to put Burden there. But I think they want Burden starting, right? I mean, you want Burden to play as many games as he can in the AHL, right? Yeah.
I think the best case scenario, Scott, is that, you know, Brossoit maybe, I mean, the way I figure it is, if Brossoit hasn't signed yet, he wants to test free agency. Maybe he goes out, maybe he looks around, maybe he doesn't see anything that's any better in terms of offers than what the Jets have on the table, and maybe he takes it at that point in time. That almost seems like the best case scenario for the Jets, but I understand why Brossoit, from his perspective in development and maybe wanting to see what the, you know, what's out there for him, he would be wanting to wait the next 4 days until free agency opens to see if a team wants to give him something or even an opportunity where he's going to play more than the handful of games that he plays here.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I don't know. Is there room for Brossoit in a Toronto? And does he want to go to a market like that? You know, it looks like they're going with Jack Campbell there. Who knows what's happening with Freddie Anderson? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, that's interesting. It depends. I mean, I guess if there's more opportunity out there for him. The thing with the flat cap world, right, is you can't just be signing your backups now if you don't have them to huge contracts, right? Like, who's giving? I mean, Pierre Mask probably might start somewhere. Yaro Halak probably still has that, although he was kind of in a platoon with Tuukka Rask there. But we've heard now, it's been reported that Halak won't be back in Boston. But again, that's a guy who is going to get paid as kind of a 1A, 1B guy probably in a certain place. So, you know, James Reimer might come at it, maybe a hometown discount. I'd be interested on him. He's capable. He's a capable backup. But again, I don't know if that guy like that, who's played a lot more games than Brossoit and you know, shows that he can be a capable backup, is going to get paid, you know, less than $1 million. Probably not, right? I mean, there'll be other teams that want a guy like that and have the room for it. So, yeah, maybe best case scenario is that you just re-sign, Laurent Brossoit to the same sort of deal that he was making, but it'll depend. I mean, will Brossoit have some leverage? You know, will teams want him in free agency and that sort of thing? If not, I think that, you know, it's good for the Jets in that sense. I mean, because you're not going after guys like Craig Anderson. You're not going after maybe Aaron Dell. Maybe, dude, you're getting a Dell. that sort of thing, but it's just interesting. Yeah, it's a good question, and I'm not entirely sure how that's going to pan out. I think
it has to be, you know, Scotty, just going to say, it has to be a guy that's comfortable not playing a lot of games, right? Like, it's like a Curtis McElhinney situation in Tampa, right? Like, he knew he wasn't going to play a lot behind Andre Vasilevsky. So I agree. If Brossoit doesn't come back, it's kind of hard, aside from maybe like a James Reimer, it's hard to predict who the Jets might sign as the backup to Helly.
McElhinney is not a bad option either. I mean, he's 38. I mean, it's probably not ideal. But again, when you're going to play Hellebuck 65 games out of the 82-game schedule, then, yeah, then maybe that just does make sense because you're like, okay, and you kind of hope your defense is improved and that sort of thing. I mean, McElhinney wasn't great in the backup role, but he didn't – I don't say he didn't have to be. I mean, you just had a guy like Vasilevsky who's just, you know, winning games, you know, at will, at that sort of thing. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I think there'll be cheaper deals this year on goalies too. I mean, it's just like the flat cap changes a lot of things and, you know, backup goalies just can't demand a lot of money right now. I mean, it just teams don't have it for them, you know, and that sort of thing. The other thing too is, do you sign a guy like do you re-sign Eric Comrie and is he the backup? I mean, we haven't really talked about that. I mean, he hasn't shown. Eric Comrie, we all know, nicest dude in the world, and that sort of thing. I think, you know, I'm not sure if he's just a capable NHL backup. I just don't know. I mean,
the problem for him is he's never really been handed that opportunity.
I know, and that's the other thing too. He's kind of an unknown, right? I mean, you know, he gets picked up by teams and he plays one or two games, and some of them he wins, and some of them he takes a lot of, you know, he takes a beating like he did in Detroit there, I believe. Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, he would also be the cheap guy. I mean, who's signing Eric Comrie in this offseason? So if you, maybe that is the, you know, the panic button for the Jets there. Well, you just re-sign Eric Comrie. I mean, they wanted him at some point to be the backup here, and it just never panned out. I mean, obviously, he spent 2 years kind of on the waiver wire, you know, bus and going around and around on that thing, and so that didn't work out.
That's very not well the record, either. Scott, I would say that's not an unreasonable expectation, though. Like that's because of the familiarity with the organization that they have with him, for sure.
I think Eric Comrie would like to re-sign here, but there's just like there's no room for him in the AHL anymore. I mean, I don't think this guy wants to play in the ECHL. No. And to be fair, I think he could sign somewhere else and play AHL minutes and a lot of them. So, you know, if all else fails, he might be your backup. I'm just not sure if he's the backup that the Jets need. I think again, the relationship with him and Connor Hellebuck, we hear that it's fine, but, you know, does it work in the same way that it had with Laurent Bossois, where it just seemed like those two, they train with the same guy. They all do, you know, everything is kind of done together. Like they were a true kind of tandem duo type thing where, it was very obvious what the roles were. I don't think that would change with Eric Comrie. Obviously, we would know what the roles are. But, you know, part of it is just like, you know, does it fit with Connor Hellebuck? And Connor Hellebuck seemed very tranquil with Laurent Bossois. And that's a nice way.
It doesn't get much more tranquil than Eric Comrie, I would suggest. And you know, they do share the same agent. They had some overlap, obviously, in the minor system. So, I mean, like, it's funny. Scott, everybody loves to be an expert as to what Eric Comrie is. Oh, he's not this.
Yeah.
There's no real body of work to say what he is at the NHL level. He's never been asked to say, you know, the main goaltender goes down with an injury. Okay, play the next five games.
Right.
You know, you give a guy one game. Okay, and he didn't have a great game.
That's tough.
That's what I mean. So it's not an easy role to have. Yeah. And
especially when your games are with other teams that. You know, you get picked up on waivers, thrown to the wolves, and you get picked up most of the time on waivers by bad teams who are looking for help, right? And so you're not getting, you know, kind of, and this is not to say that, you know, the Jets' defense has been great, but it's better than some of the teams that he played for.
Atrocious.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, maybe that is the option because, again, Eric Comrie wouldn't cost you a lot, league minimum, right? Like, I don't think that Eric Comrie's coming for anything more. He would probably take it. And, you know, he's talked about it. I mean, he'd like to stay in Winnipeg. I mean, that's just like, this is his home. He's always liked it here. He's always been super excited every time the Jets reclaimed him off the waivers. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of how that pans out. But maybe it isn't Eric Comrie if you can't. And again, you know, does the Bressois go up? I mean, it was 1.5 last year. I think it was $1 million in the contract before that. So it's kind of gone up. I don't know if it goes up any higher than that. And Bressois is better. You know, I think Bressois is better than Comrie. But again, you know, to Dave's point, just haven't seen the body of work, so we don't know. you know, but do the Jets need the extra, you know, half million or, you know, 800 and whatever it is? I'm terrible at math. But whatever that $800,000 roughly, do they need that cap space in the end after done all the stuff that they've done? And maybe that's kind of where it waits. Maybe Eric Comrie is just like, hey, there, the option's there. But, and maybe there, who knows, maybe there's a handshake agreement there that, you know, they'll take him if not. But I mean, Eric Comrie's also got to worry about his own future too. So you can't take too long on these types of things, right? Because at some point, you know, the goalie,
the musical chair stops.
Well, exactly. Right. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting. It's a good question. And, well, and you know, I think the Comrie thing kind of adds an element of, you know, that is interesting. Yeah. Anyways, go ahead, Drew.
Sorry. I was just going to say, as a final thought on that idea, if you're going with Comrie, maybe, you know, it's almost just a short-term bridge this season. Maybe you get to a point where Burden is playing well enough that you do a swap for Comrie for Burden if you want Burden to come up and be your NHL backup at a point in time, and then put Comrie back into the AHL. But, I mean, obviously that'll play itself out over the coming few, you know, certainly free agency should hopefully start before the draft is after the draft is over, but at this rate, it's iffy. They're on
1 hour 72. 1 hour and 40 minutes. 72 is what the round two took.
Well, almost, you know what the problem is? Is, you know, these teams that they get 3 minutes per pick in the second round, or in this third round, and we'll let you go on this in a minute here, Scotty. No, they get 3 minutes per pick, and so they're taking their 3 minutes, and then they're making a trade, and then the clock resets. So that's just what happened with the Blues and the Sharks. The Sharks were on the clock, took 3 minutes. Then they made a trade with St. Louis, and now St. Louis gets another 3 minutes. I mean, you might need to do something about that, where you just, you know, if you make that trade, the other team doesn't get the full 3 minutes back. It's getting a little bit tedious at this point in time.
4 hours last night to do 32? Was it 4 hours? I guess 31 picks. Because
I think we went 3 hours and 45 minutes is how long our broadcast was. Because, well, first of all, it doesn't start at 7. The first pick didn't start till 7:20.
Right.
You know,
right. Yes. Because
God forbid you have a pregame show from 6:30 to 7 or something like that. And
they're still showing like NCAA 3 highlights on ESPN. No, that's a bad. Yeah. I shouldn't joke about that. I mean, anyways. Yeah. I guess, whatever.
It's a long night.
It was a long, long night. And I mean, and then capped off by the Montreal Canadiens. Yeah. So that was an interesting. Yeah, that's a whole another topic.
That's another show.
Discuss that thing. Yeah, I mean the Jets are what, 10 picks away now. I think they're 82 right in the third round. Yeah. So hopefully there's not a lunch break here or something like that in between. So
the lunch break might be Ezzy eating his own arm. You know, as this keeps going and going and going. We're going until 1 o'clock for everybody in the audience. Just for the record, we're going until 1 p.m. After 1 p.m., our families, unfortunately, are going to require a little bit of our time. But any of the news at that point in time will be available on the website illegalcurve.com.
So you can see that.
And of course, the Winnipeg Sun, where Scotty is doing the yeoman's work that he always does as well. How was your vacation? You had a nice vacation.
Can we talk about Ted's outfit, Scott?
Oh, I wanted to. He's my boss, so I didn't want to like just lambaste him. But my goodness, I mean, the tie dye shirt or whatever the heck he was wearing, the hat. I mean, good on him. The hat was fine. I don't know what he was wearing. That shirt was something else, though.
What does it say about me that I wanted to know where he bought it? Because I would totally wear that shirt.
Yeah, that's not the Ted that I've seen very often. So, anyway, whatever.
I like Teddy showing us a little bit more of his personality, Scott. Right?
Yeah, good on him. I mean, we're on camera now for a lot of these things, right? So everybody's kind of doing their thing. I mean, I did mustard shots on your show, and I had a flute on Kenny's show, and headbands at one point, and. So, yeah, you know, you just kind of go, you know, so I don't know if you guys are watching, and you could probably want to kick me off. But the whole Jeff Gordon thing on here, man, like last night, I don't know if the one guy, the most hilarious thing of the first round is, I don't know who the host was last night on the thing, but they have this
John Bucciagross.
Oh, is that who it is? Okay, yeah. So they have a camera shot of Chris Drury in the room, and then John's like, oh, hey, Jeff, you would kind of know what's going on in there, wouldn't you? I'm like, oh, my goodness, like, that guy just got canned over nothing there, and now you're asking him to, like, talk about, like, his former team after getting, like, just, like, oh, my goodness, that was pretty funny. I was surprised there wasn't more on that. Well, there was some stuff on social media on that, because, like, he pretty much just, like, sued Oh, that was funny. Anyways, I'm laughing now at last night's stuff. But
Thank you, Scotty. We'll let you go. Go on with your day.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Scotty. Yeah,
have a good one.
Talk to you soon, buddy. There he goes. Scotty Billick joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Folks, what do you get? Jets, are they taking a defenseman or a forward? Don't everybody answer at once.
They're going to have to type their answer in. We'll see, obviously. Dmitry Kuzmin is the answer, a defenseman the Winnipeg Jets have selected. Certainly sound.
What do you know about Dmitry Kuzmin?
What's that?
He's a Belarusian. Interesting.
There you go. So they take a guy from Belarus. Future Considerations Hockey had him ranked at number 166. Dmitry Kuzmin is the defenseman, a capable, offensive-minded, puck-moving defenseman. This season in the top pro league in Belarus, he played in all situations for his team, logging heavy minutes while playing on the right side as a left-shot defenseman. Interesting. So he played on his offside there. This year in playing with men in Belarus, his greatest assets are his blend of smooth mobility and puck skill. His edge work is top notch, allowing him to move in all directions with ease, control gaps, and keep himself between puck carriers and his own net. He can turn away forecheckers to find passing lanes on the breakout. Displays a high level of skill to his game, able to use flashy dekes to beat checkers in both the offensive zone and while carrying the puck in transition. Though his skills are more often than not a positive, there are instances where he is too overzealous while handling the puck in his own zone, attempting moves on forecheckers in high risk scenarios that can burn him. Despite being trusted by his coaching staff to kill penalties, there is still a lot of work to be done in his defensive game. He is fairly undersized for a defenseman. Certainly not something we haven't heard among the Jets defensemen before. Fairly undersized for a defender and has difficulty separating players from the puck below the hash marks. And more often than not, comes up short in battles for position in front of his own goal. His defending in his own zone and particularly in front of his own net is heavily reliant on stick work and positioning. However, he is often caught with just one hand on his stick in his own zone, which in turn causes him to lose stick battles for loose pucks and makes it difficult for him to tie up opposing sticks in front. Kuzmin shows a lot to be excited about in his offensive game and ability as a puck mover, but will need some fine tuning in his own zone moving forward. There you go. An offensively inclined, undersized defenseman the Jets have taken in Dmitry Kuzmin out of Belarus. That scouting report courtesy our friends at Future Considerations Hockey.
I was going to say, and some people are saying in the chat, it sounds like a mixture of Sammy Niku and a little bit of Declan Chisholm, because Declan Chisholm, left shot defenseman, the Jets drafted a little bit late in 2018, is a very smooth skating defenseman. So, look, I mean, guys, before people start getting upset and apoplectic about a pick,
yeah,
these guys are going to take.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. No, first of all, nobody knows in the best of times. This is either not the best of times, and secondly, this guy is not someone you're seeing for years. I mean,
he's committed to play in the OHL with Flint. So
well, my point yeah. is you're not going to see him in the pro NHL game
for years.
Yeah. So the reality is, like, again, it's one of those situations where it's easy to judge it now, but we can't really say anything until we see what he turns out to be. And again, that's incumbent on him to work on his game and become better. And playing in the OHL, I'm sure the Jets will like that, because they'll give him an opportunity to watch him develop and have their people watch him a lot more closely than they did when he was overseas, right? So, again, like I said, it's easy to poo-poo things, but at the best of time, once you're out of the second round, it's a crapshoot. From 3 to 7, there's a lot of – I mean, guys, like I said, in 10 years – of drafting, the Jets have Adam Lowry, Johnny Kovacevic, and Nathan Smith. And so, as someone, Craig Penner said, JC LaPonte, who was a very good AHL player. But the reality is, there's it's not always a guarantee. And there's a lot of guys who are fifth round picks, or Mason Appleton, a sixth round pick, that that can end up panning out. So
I want to make note, sorry, Dave, future considerations. They had him, they had Kuzmin low at 166th, but Corey Pronman had him at 105th. Scott Wheeler had him at 68th, and Bob McKenzie had him at 91st. So some of the other, you know, there's obviously
I saw him as high disparity. Dober Prospects has him at 63. NHL Sound, McKean's Hockey, 73. Sorry, Dober, 63. And SMAHT Scouting, I'm not so familiar with them, but they're on listed on the Elite Prospects. They had him at 59.
So it's all over the place. Basically, to your point, you don't know. We admittedly don't know. It's a guy who's got some offensive upside, needs to work on things like all the prospects need to do at this point in time. If they didn't need to work on things, they would have been drafted, you know, probably about 48 hours ago when this draft seemingly began. But Dmitry Kuzmin is the latest member of the Winnipeg Jets. He's committed to play for Flint in the OHL. And, of course, we will have more about Mr. Kuzmin when he's selected, if the media meets with him, that'll all be available later on this afternoon on illegalcurve.com. We're going to wrap it there. We remind everybody that for all your latest draft news and Jets news, illegalcurve.com is your resource for the rest of the afternoon, for the rest of the weekend, all the time. You know that. I don't have to remind any of you about the great job that Dave M does leading off things with our on the website illegalcurve.com. We want to thank so many of you. Actually, Dave, while I'm rambling up here,
I know I'm doing it as we speak. I was doing it, Drew. Don't worry.
There you go. Dave's going to give away a t-shirt in a minute. I'm going to say thank you to our sponsors. They make this show. They make last night's show possible. They make Wednesday's upcoming show possible. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, and our friends at Seagram's. They make Illegal Curve Hockey a possibility. So support those fine businesses, support them, go out and say, you guys support Illegal Curve, we're going to support you. We do appreciate that you doing so. If you haven't already done so, smash the subscribe button, smash the like button. Let us know your thoughts about these broadcasts. They are very fun to do, but we do them for you. And so we want to hear from you about how we can improve them, what you like, what maybe you don't like. Probably less of that. We don't really want to hear the criticism too much. Our egos are very fragile, but that's okay. If you have some constructive criticism, we're happy to do that. Dave M., do you have a winner?
I don't yet. I can always reach out after. We can remember we've got a show on Wednesday. So, I'll declare our winner on Wednesday. It's a little rushed right now, or I'll do it later on our Twitter. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, because the problem is, in terms of reaching out to people, I'm usually just reaching out either via our Instagram or Twitter accounts. So, make sure
you ever wanted Dave M to slide into your DMs. That's what you're going to get. Somebody's going to get lucky with that later on this afternoon.
Okay. That's an unusual way of phrasing, Drew, but sure. I guess that's one way of putting it. But yeah, like Drew said, we'll declare a winner as soon as we can. It's just been kind of a wild show, even though it's come to an end. I can't believe we're only at the third round. There's still, you know, four rounds to go. Plus, of course, the Jets only have the one pick. But as Drew said, we've got the draft pick coming up. His media availability is going to be on right away. I'm not going to be able to get on that because I'm going to still have some stuff here with this to do. But we'll have all that stuff on illegalcurve.com. as well as all the latest with, we don't know if we're going to be speaking to Dmitry Kuzmin as well. So, and whoever the fifth round pick is. So we'll see what happens, but yeah, always fun. Best time of the year. We appreciate everybody doing this with us. We're hoping to be back either at the draft or at least doing this in June, so everybody can enjoy their normal July and they don't have to be doing this when it's gorgeous out and you'd rather be outside with your family.
Exactly. So, right.
Thanks for everybody for joining us.
Exactly right. He is Dave Manuk. Ezzy Ginsberg jumped off a couple minutes ago. He obviously says thank you as well. I say thank you to everybody as well. We'll be back Wednesday at 8:00, but we remind you that if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.